Sea Realm Vault Podcast, episode number 382, Sunday, November 22nd, 2020.
The light of consciousness shines on everyone, but not everyone gains access to the vault.
Hey, everybody. So, first up, I'm going to read some feedback that I got in response to the most recent episode of this podcast where I talked to Bea. Bea is a local performance artist. I don't want to say she's a performing artist. She's not a performance artist like Laurie Anderson. I mean, she's an aerialist. She's an actress. She's a dancer. She teaches yoga as well. You know, artists got to have side hustles to pay the rent. She also teaches children in Putney, Vermont, a very, very hippie liberal pocket here in what is mostly blue Vermont. The red pockets are scattered throughout, you know, back in the backwoods, but also in the Northeast Kingdom. The Northeast quadrant of the state is very red. But B, you know, being an artist, was just a natural member of the Blue Tribe until this year, when she suddenly discovered that she couldn't really stomach it anymore. And some might say she went too far in the opposite direction. In fact, that's what Leet Minion had to say. So first up, Leet Minion's comment. Leet Minion writes, of this interview with B, "While I realize that not every interview can be with someone who's developed a clearly articulated view to the point of writing whole books or whatever, I'll just stop right there and say, they could be. I could only invite people on to talk who have published books. In fact, that's the easiest way for me to go. It's a lot more difficult for me to draw out somebody who doesn't really have an articulated story. But the thing is, every time you refine your presentation of your story, you know, you edit it a little bit for internal consistency. And in doing so, you tend to shave off the places where the facts in the observable world don't fit your narrative to the point where your narrative becomes unassailable, which is not interesting for the most part, you know, for me to try to get somebody to articulate a narrative that they already have thoroughly articulated. That's why interviewing Bill McKibben is such a frustrating exercise, which I never want to do again, even though he's a name, people will come in to listen to Bill McKibben. But he never says anything to me that I haven't heard him say in the exact same words somewhere else. So B was the exact opposite. She's the anti-Bill McKibben. She doesn't have her shit together in terms of presenting a coherent story. And largely, I mean, when I first invited her to come in and, you know, record an interview with me, she had just told me a very emotional story about, you know, how she had damaged her relationship by just reflexively spewing this Blue Tribe bullshit about, you know, white male privilege to a guy who's lived a very, very hard knock life. And that was what was compelling to me, you know, was the heartfelt regret that she felt for, you know, turning her mouth and body over to just the meme bot programming of the stereotypical self-congratulatory, self-righteous Blue Tribe. I realize there are plenty of self-congratulatory Red Tribers as well. But in the time between when I invited her to participate and the day she showed up to record the conversation, she set about trying to turn herself into an advocate for her point of view, listening to a lot of podcasts, you know, taking notes, trying to get a story together. And what she started to open up with, you know, in that conversation wasn't nearly as interesting to me as the less articulate, less informed, but much more emotionally engaged story that she'd told me a week or so before that. But before I go on at length, let me just, without further interruption, I will read the entirety of Leet Minion's message. Leet Minion writes, "While I realize that not every interview can be with someone who's developed a clearly articulated view to the point of writing whole books or whatever, I found this one really frustrating. I think there's a tendency for people who are just becoming aware of the forces that shape their worldview to embrace the contrarian impulse intensely, but not in a way that's immediately so much more articulable. Generalities that are counter to the dominant narrative, or more accurately, a predominant media narrative, what with filter bubbles and all, can be quite confounding, like the idea that President Trump is generally honest. Confounding because On one hand, that seems obviously not correct. And on the other hand, I get the sense that if I dip my toes into those waters, I'm going to be eaten by postmodernist sharks. How can I claim to observe the words and actions of someone as distant and as central as the president? The bit at the end about Straka was somewhat interesting. There are definitely interesting psychological dynamics in how politically polarized sides treat their own and their opponents' defectors. That said, I don't think there's a lot of evidence from the recent election that people are walking away en masse from either of the current coalitions in U.S. electoral politics. All right, a lot of good stuff there. So I'm not going to reread it, but generally, Liebmanian says, when you wake up to the fact that, you know, your own point of view has authors, you know, authors other than you, there are sources for your worldview, and, you know, you discover that very fundamental fact about your experience of the world, yeah, there is a tendency to say, oh, shit, I'm being lied to and manipulated. Who is saying the exact opposite of what I've been hearing? Let me latch onto that. Well, that's clearly not helpful. You know, just what is most dissimilar or what is most obviously opposed to what I've been hearing, and I'm going to consider that the truth from now on, ugh, you know, that certainly doesn't leave much room for course correction. At least not with just that one heuristic. But, you know, swinging to the opposite extreme is in some ways helpful. At least you've moved, you know? Lots of people never do move. Lots of people never do even cotton on to the idea that their point of view has authors outside themselves. Now, if you recall, in that interview, I asked B, are you afraid that you've moved from a standard blue tribe narrative to a standard red tribe narrative? Now, what she was articulating was not the standard red tribe narrative. What she was articulating was the youthful, I don't want to say alt-right because that has all kinds of nasty connotations, but, you know, the non-standard, the youthful sort of Tim Pool-esque dissident right. Now, I don't want to talk a whole lot about Donald Trump. I mean, we're going to have the opportunity to not talk about him pretty soon, which, oh, I welcome that. Liebmanian says it's pretty obvious that the man is not an honest person. And yeah, I agree. I mean, trying to sit through his State of the Nation addresses was just nauseating. You know, he tried to claim that the economy was so amazingly great. And, you know, what's he basing it on? The stock market? You know, obviously, most people have no material interest in the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the NASDAQ. They have nothing invested in it. They can't spare anything to invest. They are living hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck. And that investment shit, you know, that's for the top 20%. That's not for them. So the stock market, as Crystal Ball likes to say, you know, the stock market is a barometer of the feelings of rich people. It is not any sort of indicator of the economic health of the nation. So, you know, when Donald Trump is trumpeting a high average stock value, I'm unimpressed. Basically, you know, when he's in charge and when the country, the state of the country is his responsibility, you know, to either take the blame for or to take credit for, then, you know, he says whatever flatters him, whatever makes him look good. It doesn't matter how unhinged, he will say it if it makes him look good in the moment. So, yeah, I agree. Donald Trump has zero interest in objective truth. That said, I do not believe that he is this coldly calculating Machiavellian actor either. From my perspective, I've hated some of the things he said, you know, in terms of admiring people like Rodrigo Duterte or Vladimir Putin. I mean, there's a part of him that he doesn't even attempt to hide, you know, who would like to be this strongman dictator type, but he doesn't have the focus, he doesn't have the drive, he doesn't have, you know, the ability to concentrate his intelligence, his considerable intelligence, on that objective, you know, for the duration that it would require to achieve it. He seems to have the attention span of a guppy with the appetite of a shark. But his appetite is only for self-aggrandizement. He seems to have no particular ideological commitments and no vision for what he would like the country to be other than, you know, the country under which he is the president. But as we go into, you know, our next foreign military adventure, don't know what it's going to be. I'm not religious, but I pray. I dearly hope that it's not Venezuela. Please do not invade Venezuela, Mr. President-elect. And I know Joe Biden has no interest whatsoever in invading Venezuela, but lots of people do. lots of people who will have his ear, and he will be the ultimate, ultimate do-nothing president with an unaccountable cast of villains behind the scenes doing all the neoliberal bullshit, all the neoconservative bullshit, in fact. You know, where the two, neoliberalism and neoconservatism, mesh beautifully. They dovetail in the event of a foreign military adventure. Goldman Sachs, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Halliburton, they would all love to see the United States invade Venezuela. And none of the people making money from that venture would lose sons or daughters, or have sons and daughters come home with half their face burned off or missing limbs. It's not going to happen to anybody in that class. But there is a very real possibility that economic forces and the, you know, just the economic lay of the land in the next few years will force one or both of my children into the military. And they'd be the ones coming home with half their face burned off. You know, Donald Trump's attempts, and you're welcome to put attempts in air quotes if you want to draw down U.S. forces in places like Syria and Afghanistan. You could say they've been either half-hearted or cynical, you know, cynical show attempts that he knew would never work. But that's infinitely more than we could ever expect from Joe Biden in terms of resisting the urge to go to war. You know, of course, without declaring war. So while, you know, the back to brunch liberals are super happy now that Donald Trump is going to move from being the president to being, you know, the figurehead of a new conservative media empire, I think we are just now entering a period of extreme danger, where the pent-up ambitions of people who have been somewhat, slightly stymied by the last 4 years of a Donald Trump presidency will now have absolute free rein. Nothing they have in mind is good for you or anyone you love. All right, on the other side of the coin, responding to that same episode and that same conversation, Kay writes, "Well, I enjoyed that. Just yesterday, I had a brief discussion with some friends about the current plague, and sure enough, it was all Trump's fault. Walk away? Where do I sign up?" So the walk away movement, people basically recognizing that the Democratic Party is the party of Silicon Valley and Wall Street, and definitely not only not interested in helping working people, but fully committed to preventing any sort of progressive movement in this country. They're much more interested in courting moderate Republicans and lashing the left in their own party than they are in any sort of progressive, dare I say, reforms. People, we are entering into a very, very dangerous period. And it has nothing to do with this ridiculous pandemic. Okay, so I'm not going to go on in that vein. What I'm going to do for the rest of the hour, or thereabouts, is share with you some of the conversation that I recorded. And I wasn't really recording a conversation. I was just doing a live stream in which I was drawing. Anyway, every day, I've changed the time, but right now it's Monday through Friday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. I do a 3-hour live stream where I'm drawing and I'm looking over at the chat and, you know, engaging to the best of my ability, you know, without taking too much away from the drawing, with the conversations taking place in the chat. But I've discovered that that's a whole lot easier if I have somebody else whose voice is audible in the stream. And for a time, it was my girlfriend Rose, but, you know, she's in the Philippines and I'm here. And now that the live stream takes place in the afternoon, well, that's the middle of the night for her. That's a time when she absolutely has to be sleeping. So now I've just started inviting people, you know, to come and hang out in the, you know, hang out on the live stream. It's not an interview. It's not me interviewing them, because really I'm just drawing and chatting. And it's a 3-hour live stream. And I tell people, you don't have to be here the full 3 hours. That's certainly not a requirement. And you don't have to have anything at the ready. You don't have to be able to present on a topic. But, you know, so far, most of the people that I've invited, they haven't really taken that to heart. I think they've come prepared. And it's certainly true of the listener, who's a longtime C-Realm listener, who, you know, said that he would be willing to talk on the live stream, Holon Mundi. And he suggested that we talk about cryptocurrency. And it was his mention of cryptocurrency which caused me to check the Bitcoin price for the first time in many months. The last time I was paying attention to Bitcoin, it was down around $6,000 or $7,000 per Bitcoin. As of today, it's up around $18,000 per coin. So Bitcoin is on the move. And so is gold. And it's not just Hole on Mundi who holds this opinion. I've heard it elsewhere. It's basically that Bitcoin is gold for young people. Or maybe it's that gold is the Bitcoin for people who don't understand how to buy and sell Bitcoin. Either way, they are both places for people to put money when they don't trust, well, they don't trust the integrity of the currency, or they don't trust financial institutions. They look for something with inherent value. Some people think it's gold. Some people think it's Bitcoin. Some people think it's the goodwill that you can foster among the people around you when you share your wealth in good times. I'm mostly in that third category, although I don't seem to stay in one place long enough to ever withdraw the goodwill that I have built up in the local institutions. But as you'll hear me say fairly early on in this conversation, you know, you've heard me do several episodes on cryptocurrency or on Bitcoin. I've talked to a lot of people who claim to know a lot about the subject. I've done far more in terms of due diligence, you know, of understanding the technology than I think most people have, and it still doesn't mean much at all to me. And yet, I have a few fractions of Bitcoin squirreled away right now in my Cash App account. And I would liquidate any other investment, really, before liquidating that one right now. Although, if I were going to liquidate, right now is a good time to do it, because I don't see it staying at 18,000. I think this is definitely a spike. Although, you know, there are hodlers, they're called, which is holders, misspelled. Hodlers who insist, no, it's going to be $100,000 a coin. Just you wait and see. And you know, it might. Who knows? Not me. Anyway, here's a conversation, or just chatting, really. Here's me just hanging out with Hole on Mundi, talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and other topics. Let's see, from Hole on Mundi to everyone, the BTC guy, the Bitcoin guy is here. Yay, okay. More like Buttcoin. Well, it's at 16,000 right now, which is up, it's more than double than when last I checked. But hey, first, hang on for a second here, and funny how people only talk about it when it's up. I'm happy to talk about it whenever. So I'm trying to juggle a Zoom meeting and this live stream at the same time.
So, can you hear me right now?
Ah, yes. I will erase the message I was typing. Yes, I do hear you. All right.
Wow, I didn't realize I was going to be on the West.
You didn't realize it was going to be what?
I thought I was going to be chatting Wally. I didn't realize I was going to be speaking with you verbally, just through text.
Oh.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, see, I'm working on artwork right now, so I can talk and draw, but I can't type and draw. Let's see if we can just get right into the topic at hand, which is Bitcoin. The other day, you contacted me via Patreon, and you mentioned the possibility of talking about Bitcoin, and I hadn't checked the Bitcoin price in many months. And I think the last time I looked at it, it was around $6,000 or $7,000 for one coin.
Yes.
And now it's up to $16,000. So what do you think's going on? Why is Bitcoin riding so high right now?
Well, partially there are cycles to Bitcoin, even if there haven't been so many as with many other financial instruments. It's still a cyclic nature to it. And it's also gaining momentum in the media and the press. And I'm not sure how to describe it. It has some fundamental characteristics that make it attractive as a functioning tool to transfer things, money and timestamp stuff and such. But that's slightly disconnected from the current perception of its value. And it's taking the role of gold for digital generations, so to speak.
Yeah, I talked to somebody else recently who mentioned that same thing, that boomers and probably Gen Xers, if they get panicky about the strength of, say, the U.S. dollar, they're gonna run either to, well, they'll run to gold, but younger folks will run to Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. Alexa, what's the Ethereum price?
One Ethereum is worth $462.20. Up 3.4% over the last 24 hours.
All right, so Bitcoin's up about 4% over the last 24 hours. Ethereum's up about 3.something%. So they seem to be rising together. It's just that Bitcoin is the big dog and is worth more.
But, yeah, they're fairly similar in a first impression, you know, as you approach it as an investor, but they're quite different technically. And Bitcoin is kind of like the old slow guy who doesn't want to change things as it is. Don't fix what isn't broken. Bitcoin is the experimental, anything's possible kind of sandbox.
Now, I talked to somebody about Ethereum years ago, and he was talking about how it's more than just a cryptocurrency. It's basically, it's supposed to be, you know, this long-promised killer app for blockchain technology, which is going to allow all manner of transactions and interactions, even ones that aren't particularly financial. And yet I'm still waiting to hear about, you know, how I could actually use that technology. And we're talking, this conversation was like 6 years ago.
Yeah. There are things being done, especially around democracy and creating local voting things and creating non-governmental organizations, structures, like parts of such as an incentive of in a structure like that could be based on a blockchain. But it's you rarely really need the blockchain. It's a pretty unwieldy, heavy tool to stop people from changing things that are written already. That's basically it. And but Ethereum, you can use that as a secure layer to verify things. So you don't have to trust each other. And then you can do anything from deciding who gets the laundromat to deciding how to vote or create a structure within a union with incentives for how you work or whatever. All these kinds of things are possible. But I think it's in democracy movements that they are the ones that are non-financial that are taking this to some place. And I think it was in South America or South America somewhere. I could look it up. I heard a podcast about it. But right now, it's the financial value that is most appealing and is driving the innovation. It's not just speculation, but there is a lot of speculation. It's still in its infancy. It's like talking about HTTP and all the different internet protocols. None of them ended up being the big tech companies, so to speak. It was Google who made the money, not the base layer of the internet. And in a way, Ethereum is the base layer, and people are building apps on top of it.
Well, I don't build apps. At best, I use them, and at worst, I'm confounded by them. So,
yes.
For years, I was accepting donations from listeners in Bitcoin, and very early on, somebody sent me 5 Bitcoin, and at the time, that was worth like $2, and I didn't really care, and I never bothered to open an account with some place where I could exchange this little temporary wallet that I had for a permanent one. And eventually those 5 Bitcoin, dissipated. Had I sold them at the height, of their value, it would have been like $100,000 that I just, that just evaporated because I didn't care about it. And I didn't really understand it. But then...
That's a fairly common story.
Yeah, then, I did eventually open a Coinbase account. And my Bitcoin finally did get converted into something. Not those 5, I wish... I still had those 5, but the Bitcoin I had did get converted over to this Coinbase account, and I was able to transfer it to a bank account, turn it into dollars. I bought a computer with it. I bought a truck with it, not a new truck, a used truck. And I wish I hadn't bought anything because, I wish I still had all those Bitcoin. They'd be worth a lot more now. But That was years ago that I managed to get the Bitcoin transferred over to this Coinbase account. But then Coinbase was such a pain in the ass to try to interact with. And, I would ask for customer service assistance and they'd leave me waiting for weeks on end before getting back to me with a completely useless reply. And so eventually I said, forget it. I'm just not interested in this at all. And then... listening to Joe Rogan talk about the marvels of Cash App and how you can use the Cash App to buy and sell Bitcoin, I thought, that's pretty cool. I'll try that. So that was less than a year ago, I think. And I put a couple $100 into Bitcoin via the Cash App. And now when I open the Cash App, I can't find anything at all to do with Bitcoin. I don't see any balance that I might have. Or it's like that money is... Oh, here we are. Here's the Bitcoin, actually. Now I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it's quite similar to gold that way.
How so?
Well, can you go buy a Coke in the store
with gold?
Chisel off a piece of your bar of gold.
Right. Exactly.
in other times, yes. But Bitcoin is an accepted method of transferring value right now. You can buy all kinds of stuff.
You can buy drugs with it.
Yeah, you can buy anything that anyone will sell you as long as they accept Bitcoin. But technically, to actually do it in a convenient way, and not specifically about drugs, but about legal things, you go get a gift card, for example. Mm-hmm. Or you go get a prepaid Visa card that you can transfer crypto into and use it to pay fiat with. It requires KYC, so you have to... that part requires you to the Visa conversion. You know, that goes to fiat. So you have to give out your identity. But as long as you're dealing with Bitcoin, it's just like cash. In that sense, it is like cash. And that's pretty attractive. That provides a market for people who want to trade anonymously.
So we jumped right into the subject matter here. But let me ask you to introduce yourself.
Fine, yeah. Well, I'm originally Swedish, but I currently live in Spain because I have family here as well. What do I do? I have one of those jobs, quite similar to your Amazon job.
Oh, my condolences.
thank you. Well, it's a nice drone job, you know. It's a walled garden. There's no way for me to advance or improve anything in any significant way. There are KPIs and metrics, painted on the walls. You better move around these lines or someone's going to complain.
What's a KPI?
That's the life. Key performance indicator.
All right.
Yeah.
Metrics.
It's the latest name for whatever metric you want.
Yeah.
So, one of those jobs, it's fine. I don't make a lot of money here. I made more in Scandinavia, but I want to stay with my family, so it's worth it. I didn't grow up with that side of the family. Decided to go one day, like, okay, did I do something significant with my life? Am I currently, in some ways, but am I currently involved in something I can't leave that I would sacrifice a relationship with my family for? And no, I packed up my bags. That's actually the latest in my story of travels. And I'm not sure. Did I touch enough points for anyone to get an image of me?
Oh,
perhaps some education and things like this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Broken music teacher education. Yes, unfinished. I stopped as soon as I was at the last year of college and started going into the schools, actually seeing the work in my environment and the way it was completely divorced from what the image we were given, and the tools we were given to use in the university. And it was just like full bureaucracy, not at all focused around music, so to speak. It was more important to write down everything that happened so you had an excuse when, or a reason when the teachers complained about the grades, than actually teaching the kids.
So, I asked you to introduce yourself, and I didn't ask any specific questions, and so you defaulted to, employment. We'll start with employment, and then go on to education. But let me ask you to spell out...
You speak a lot of times.
Yeah. Let me ask you to spell out your connection to the Sea Realm podcast and the topics that it has covered in the past.
All right. I came into the picture just when you came out of your singularitarian thing, I believe, like around 2011.
Huh. No, I was pretty much over singularitarianism before I started the podcast, or, you know, just as I started the podcast. When it was in single digits, I was already quite skeptical of that notion.
Yes, but you're still related to it. So
yeah, well, I'll still... You know, I'll still have a conversation on those topics if somebody wants to.
Yeah, I've been traveling, like backpacking for 3 years, total hippie style, and it was just fantastic. I met so many people that were wonderful. And then when I got back to Scandinavia, I wanted to kind of root myself again. That's when I found your podcast, and I was also reading a lot about how the fiat system works. Classic conspiracy researching on the online style. yeah, it's worth it. It's worth, you know, going through that shit to see, get a counterweight to the normal mumbo jumbo, so to speak, that comes out of the media. It's different media everywhere, but that part's the same. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad you discovered the podcast. Too bad you didn't discover it while you were still traveling. Podcasts are great for, you know, for long train rides or plane rides or sitting in airports or all the instances during travel where you're just sitting and doing nothing, really.
Absolutely. But there are most of the topics that are interesting to me throughout your podcast. Even the occult's little tail end there, I found really interesting. Like it seemed to be, it touched on a lot of subjects, and I was listening to other podcasts that were kind of interesting. This very famous guy from LA, what's his name now? It was a long time I listened to it last. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to come to me. However, that part, I guess I mentioned it because it sticks out, but most of the topics, I've always been very, individualistic in a socialistic or social democrat society, which I believe is kind of different. Maybe I should have been diagnosed with some letters or letter combination or something. It's not really something that I would. I'm happy I didn't. You know, I'm happy I didn't go to a doctor and got some diagnosis and got a drug to change my life forever. But I kind of took for granted that people meant what they said when I was a kid and all that kind of stuff. It was a harsh, you know, coming to.
So one topic that I used to cover very obsessively and which I'm almost allergic to now is the topic of the collapse of industrial civilization. And if you think that a collapse, you know, complete techno collapse is coming soon, then Bitcoin should be the last thing you'd be interested in. So I'm inferring, I guess, a little bit about your position on collapse. But rather than do that, let me just ask you to speak directly to that subject.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. You can like make striations of collapse and say, like, now you're talking about an electrically catastrophic event, you know, where you can't run the computers that are needed for the system to work. Is that the question?
No, the question is, in the various sort of non-standard narratives that you've dabbled in, have you ever, were you part of the peak oil scene? Did you think that...
I found it very interesting, mostly through your podcast. Uh-huh. I've diverged and, you know, picked up some info and blogs here and there. But I was very drawn to the collapse scenario, but not to the houses going to crumble around us in 20 years. Not that way. But I saw that society was, you know, fucked because people had no idea what they were doing and they were corrupt. And I'm not sure that anyone really. I mean, I do believe in a bottom up kind of organization and so on. Like food arrives in. There was something that you once said, like food arrives to everyone in London, despite there not being a centralized system, you know, spreading it out evenly or whatever. And that collapse scenario really caught on for me when I saw how the fiat system was basically a Ponzi scheme. You know, a few guys, the closer you are to the money printer, the more advantages you have. And the people that are further away, they pay for you through inflation, pretty much, and other things. So that's a common recurring theme of keeping walls around, protecting power around. You know, it's like it's the same thing in a family. It's a natural human reaction, but taken to a scale that is just like, you know, the negative consequences are disproportionate to the function of this. Family instinct, you know, like you protect ours. I think that's my hopeful way of describing why we're kind of screwed in the economical system.
So your collapse is an economic collapse. That's the thing that you see as the most pressing issue.
It's my most recent take on collapse.
Okay.
Economy has always been like, I never got into stocks. I still don't have stocks. I have cryptocurrencies because I know about it now. I studied it. But I felt like owning stocks was being, a passive leech on people like myself. You know, divorcing ownership from rights to decide about what's going to happen with that. You know, you can have a stock, but you don't have any, you're exposed to the price movement of it and the revenue of the company, but you don't really have anything to do with what's there. It's a basic question of ownership to me. And I guess this is kind of radical, but I feel like ownership is a fading quality. It's something that when you are involved with something, you can claim ownership if it's appropriate. It's like the Gaelic word for ownership, it doesn't exist. They phrase it like, he or she is with me. It is with me. It's like they are coexistent in the story more than they belong together in a set way. Does that make sense?
I think I need you to spell it out for me a bit more.
All right. Well, when you own something, it's a story you're saying, you're telling yourself. You want other people to accept it, and as long as they do, all is fine. That thing stays with you. When someone else needs it, you know, and you don't want to change the story anymore, you want to keep it to stay there with you, even though you don't need it and they need it. That's a classic scenario of where ownership, you know, comes into question. Is it, you know, are we some kind of communist style, things should be owned by everyone and go to the place where it's most needed. It's all about who tells the story. Why are we, how do we say that something belongs with something else? And I claim that me paying virtual money, all money is virtual except for hard cash, just paying some stuff, some, you know, internet dust to get something sent to me in the mail, that's why do I own this? Do I belong with this? It is not meaningful. So I have a basic kind of, I want to dissociate from the things that I feel are bad. And the economic system has terrible things in it. And I'm just beginning to understand some of them, you know? And it's cognitive dissonance that I'm struggling with. I don't want to be a part of something that hurts others like me. And it's a basic thing. But now I'm realizing that in order to have any positive effect, I have to be a part of this new evolution of economy, where it's possible for people to create value in small circles where it matters. It's not just about creating a big system of, oh, we got the new money, it's cool, yeah, now we can be rich instead. That's of course going to happen. This is partially a redistribution of wealth for the people that are technically savvy and early, which is us.
Are you familiar with the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence?
No, as such, no.
That's an organization that is devoted to cracking the problem of friendly AI. You know, they want to align the values of emerging artificial intelligence with human values. And it was founded and administered by a guy named Eliezer Yudkowsky. Is that a familiar name to you?
No.
Okay.
The great conversationist.
So when I first started following him, his, you know, Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence or whatever it was called, I may be getting the name wrong, but it was notional, basically. It was a website and it was one guy and he had, you know, he published a few articles and he had some interests, but, you know, it wasn't anything big. But a lot of the people who were the early participants on that site were also early adopters of Bitcoin. And now, you know, his venture is very well funded. because a lot of those early Bitcoin adopters are now quite wealthy and they're quite generous, you know, in supporting the causes that they believe in, like friendly AI. So
I can imagine that.
To me, that's an illustration of what you were just saying, that, you know, here's this new kind of money that comes along, and the people who understand how to use it early on and who do get involved with it early on, they are the beneficiaries of a technologically mediated wealth transfer.
Sure. But they are not the only ones.
Right.
No. But this is a potential problem in this thing. That what it's made to avoid is centralizing things, you know. It's like that's the main tool for remaining secure. And if very few people have a lot of the coins, then it's not doing the job anymore. Then you need to do something else, you know. The price would crash if that happened.
So are you critical of the implementation of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies or the culture that has arisen around them?
Well, yeah, it's a lot of unsubstantiated hype coming out of people, but the enthusiasm is appropriate if they just would have studied. So I don't think we're like way off the mark, but we're definitely seeing more volatile swings than necessary, you know, so to speak, because of this. And people are losing money because they're listening to the wrong people and not checking what's actually going on. And but that's very simple in this world. That's actually something you can learn. It's within reach to look things up. Did this really happen? Oh, was there a transfer of $1 billion of Bitcoin happening in the background without me noticing? Yes, I can get an alert for all those kinds of things. There's a company on a blockchain that does those kinds of alerts because it's, you know, hard to do it yourself, but you can, and they simplify the process. And that's how people make money on top of these open source systems, you know. Maybe I got away from the question. Can you steer me right again?
Well, the question I think was not particularly well defined, so the fact that you drifted away from it is not a problem. But I'm 52 years old, and, you know, I was an early employee at Amazon.com. I was an early adopter of computer technology. You know, my first computer was a Apple II Plus back in the mid-80s. And so I don't feel like a Luddite. I don't identify as a Luddite or as somebody who is angry about technology. But at the same time, I have recorded multiple interviews with people over the years about Bitcoin and about blockchain and cryptocurrencies and related technologies. I think I've done more than my, you know, what should be expected of an individual to try to understand these technologies, and I can't really claim to understand them.
That's fair.
And I've been hearing about these grand promises, you know, these grand civilizational transformations that are going to accrue from the widespread application of blockchain. And, you know, I've been hearing this for years, and I've asked people repeatedly, well, concretely, what are you talking about? I mean, how is this going to affect my life? And as I say, I think I've done far more diligence in pursuing answers to these questions than most people have, and I'm still pretty clueless. And to the point where
right,
I've...
So what if you have a grasp on?
How can blockchain and cryptocurrencies improve the lives of people who are not heavily steeped in information technology?
Okay, let's say that someone wants to trade at all. They want to have a bank account or something that does what a bank account does.
Uh-huh.
And they end up in some kind of register. I'm sure you have plenty of registers, we got them. And they can make you undesirable as a banking customer. And it's quite easy to get on one of those lists, depending on what you do. Tattoo artists, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And any sex worker of any kind. All this stuff. I'm not here to speak about sex workers. I don't really care. It's not my work. But so, anyway, they can use Bitcoin or similar technologies to exchange value over the internet. Or not even the internet, It's a separate protocol from the internet. You can use, you know, you can communicate through Bitcoin only. It's really deeper than I thought. Recently found out that it's a protocol parallel to the internet on top of it.
So you can use Bitcoin as some sort of encrypted messaging service? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's actually on. Yeah, the base chain is kind of slow. Imagine a huge turning gear, and then on top of it you have flywheels, and these are second layer systems where you can do other things based on. But occasionally you make an imprint on the base chain to get the security and to say this happened, and okay, I saw that gesture. Let's get back to basics. On top of these other chains, you can have privacy, which you cannot on Bitcoin right now. You have pseudonymous activity. So if someone manages to connect your pseudonymous addresses with your fiat bank account, they know where you are, who you are, all that stuff. And that so don't do anything on blockchains to evade taxes or criminal activity. It's the worst, the worst place to do anything like that, because it's traceable forever, pretty much. So as a, how you can improve life, in a sense, is just that. You know that what you do is going to happen. You know, when you click on the screen, it's just a virtual button. You don't know the code behind it unless it's open source. Does that make sense? You can trust the system in a whole different way. PayPal routinely stops my the money that comes into my PayPal account because I trade musical instruments. And for some reason, they have a bot that stops it, and I have to wait for months, even if I contact them. It's something I would like to avoid. That's a simple like life hack that it can be.
So I'm rather dependent on PayPal. You know, if PayPal freezes my account, my primary purchasing instrument in this world, when I go to the store and I buy something, I do it with my PayPal debit card. And about half of my income comes in through PayPal. So if they just decided that they didn't like something about how I was conducting my life or my business, yeah, they're in a position to do me immediate and grievous harm.
Yeah.
So how could I use cryptocurrency to get out from under that, you know, get out from under PayPal's thumb?
Well, you write down what's called a seed phrase, which is basically your password. And the password makes it possible for you to send the coins to someone else. And that's all that really is. That makes you the owner. You write that down. I have a device to keep it for me. And it, unless that burns up, you know, you can etch it into metal. And then you have it forever. You can memorize it across borders with hundreds of thousands of dollars, which you can't do with gold or cash. That's a classic. And so say that someone is a refugee. They would set up a wallet. It could be on the phone for convenience, but it's more insecure. Or you can memorize it. I don't recommend doing that for more than a short period of time, though. it's risky. Just like you lost your coins because you lost this password and you lost your computer, right?
No, it's not that I lost the password. It's just somebody sent me 5 Bitcoin and I didn't have an account into which to deposit that Bitcoin. And eventually the transaction, I guess, was reversed or voided or something, just because I was not properly set up to receive the Bitcoin.
It's entirely possible that you still have them, but you just need the code to be able to send them. That would be quite nice, wouldn't it?
I could certainly do with that money, yeah. That would work for me.
So contact the guy. Tell him you can have half. Ask for the code. If he has the code, he could have spent them already.
All right. Well, I'm not going to go trying to find a 12-year-old email just now, but I will look into that.
No, not just now. But this illustrates some of the problems that show up when you are responsible for your money. And this is not regular money. This is the stuff that that is behind the money. You know, when the banks lend out money, they have to have a reserve, a tiny, tiny little bit. It depends how much, you know, different countries have different amounts. In these states, I think it's like 0.9% or something.
Yeah, a ridiculously small amount of the money that they claim to control.
Yeah, but that's the kind of money that Bitcoin is. So you can use Bitcoin as collateral. When Bitcoin reaches a more solid state, so to speak, imagine it's in a kind of gaseous fluid form right now, but it will solidify as more money pour into it, it will stop being volatile. And then all of a sudden, you have something that is like rock solid while the rest of the currencies occur. I mean, the real inflation rate currently should be around 25%, in my opinion. That would be like a realistic estimate of what's going on. But you're not seeing it yet because the banks are not lending out all this stimulus money. The money is on the sheet, but the banks are not lending it out. So people are in a deflationary market. That's what I hear lately, and I like that explanation because I don't understand why. How do they print so much money and the effects are not what we expect? You know, it's the opposite that's happening in the current economy.
So I have to... I begin a lot of sentences these days with, I'm not a Marxist, but...
Go ahead.
So, yeah, it seems like this pandemic has been an excuse to transfer a lot of money to people who already have a lot of money. And people who don't already have a lot of money are, you know, they're largely harmed by the deliberate shutdown of the normal economy. You know, where people... People trade goods and services for money, and it's become very hard to do that. And yet, you know, the billionaires who reside in the United States have dramatically increased their holdings as a result of this pandemic and the reactions taken in response to it. And so I don't have a lot of exotic ambitions in terms of moving money or doing things with money. I basically need to, you know, pay my rent, pay my child support, buy groceries. And all of these things, you know, I have financial instruments that I can use to do these things. I have a checking account and I write a check, you know, for my rent. I have, a PayPal account. And when I go to the grocery store, I pay for my groceries with my, you know, the balance in my PayPal account. These are very, from my perspective, very mundane things. And it's, I don't have, you know, ambitions to do more exotic things with money, really. And so that's why I guess I don't, you know, my interest in Bitcoin and other, to me, exotic forms of currency or exotic forms of exchange, it's interesting in a sort of abstract way, but it doesn't seem to penetrate into my actual lived experience very much.
No, I perfectly understand, and that's reasonable. Like, it doesn't sound like you should replace PayPal right now with something like Bitcoin necessarily. However, you should spread your bags. You know, you shouldn't be having everything run through PayPal because, like you said, that could be devastating. So you lost that channel. I hear there's something called canceling going on over there.
Yeah.
I don't think you're in the risk zone or anything, but. You never know what kind of old information surfaces when some happy AI looks over, you know, internet data.
Well, so, you may have heard me say that I got kicked off of Facebook.
Sorry?
I said you may have heard me talk about how I've been kicked off of Facebook.
Yes.
So I no longer have any interaction with Facebook at all. And I suspect that I'm the safer for it. I should probably get off Twitter as well. Those are the places where people are likely to see something that I've said, disagree with it, and, you know, the flavor of the times is when somebody says something you disagree with, you try to injure their, you know, you try to injure them by sabotaging their ability to make a living, by getting them fired or getting them, you know, banned from certain services like banking.
Yeah, that could be a result, and this is an example of how string of connections can lead to something. It's a far-fetched scenario. I mean, it's much more likely something like that would happen if there are legal things going on, whatever, in the past, and like that's been a major problem for us when we have centralized governments doing, out of control, that they make lists. Those lists are no good, to speak simply, first they came for those guys, then they came for the other guys. You didn't speak up, and then they came for the neighbors, and then they came for you. It's that kind of thinking. It's better to, just like with PayPal, spread your basket. So let's say that you don't store any money in PayPal. Only make sure only to use have the money that you need to be liquid in PayPal, and then put others in a different account. It also helps psychologically to say, I'm not sure if this is something you need to hear, but I did.
You mentioned your philosophical objections to owning stock earlier. And for me, owning stock it's a way of just like taking money that I might otherwise spend and putting it out of reach. Because I have not a whole lot of stocks, but I have some money locked up in stocks right now. And it would just be a big pain in the ass to try to, cash them in. So yeah. I'm likely to endure being broke for a short time rather than go through the trouble of accessing money that I have locked up in investments somewhere. Whereas if it's just an account someplace, like a money market account or something, where I can easily just liquidate a piece of it and not even have to worry too much about which piece is being liquidated, because that's not really under my control, that's money I'm more likely to spend. So I'm using stocks to hide money from myself. I know where it is, but I also know that I'm lazy and I'm not going to go to the trouble of selling stock just to raise a short amount of, a small amount of money in the short term.
No, I see that. And that's also a useful psychological, form to move in. But you can do similar things in the crypto space. Have you heard of stable coins?
I have not.
It's a coin that mimics the motion of the dollar, for example, or the Canadian dollar or some other currency or whatever. And these are you buy them, and then you buy with your US dollar, for example, and then you buy cryptocurrencies. And since it's a hassle to exchange crypto to fiat, you use these instead. So they make it easy to transact in the system. And you can put them away in these virtual boxes, so to speak. It's called staking. You stake your money. And it's quite a loose term, but Ethereum is, like the most known chain that does this, and it's recent. And what it practically does is it replaces the hardware miners, the guys with all the computers cracking the code of Bitcoin, practically, to be able to put a new block into the motion, make it all secure. Now you have a different system. You have an incentive-based system. So you stake your money, and you get to be the guy who makes the next block in the system. And your money is locked up for a period of time, and you gain interest, variable interest. Right now it's probably 30%, but it's going to go down to around 5%, I'm guessing, 6-10% as the system equalizes over time. So people will be able to buy the cryptocurrency, put it away to secure the network, so to speak, and this is in the air. This is going to work properly. So it's going to be like a bomb.
Like a bomb?
You can treat it like a bomb.
Oh, a bond.
Bond.
A bond, yes.
Yeah. Pretty much, yes. I don't know much about financial explosives, but that's there's something called DeFi, and it's decentralized finance. That's also a word that's like an umbrella word. Very few of these apps really are totally decentralized, but the point is that you can find something called, for example, a yield aggregator. And it's a program that looks for the best yield you can get in different cryptocurrencies. You check boxes. Which cryptocurrencies do you want to include? And then you put maybe 10K in there. That you need to be over, say, 4K for this to work. Otherwise, the fees are too expensive. And it just shuffles these money around automatically, in a very intelligent way to maximize your yield for putting this money away. And that's very new. That's not really existing in the current financial system. There, things are much slower. So this makes huge money for people in very simple ways. You have a super simple interface online where you just put your money in. So this is the cutting edge of the risky business in the crypto space right now. Does that make sense? And that's an application that is accessible, but extremely risky.
Yeah. So when you say accessible, but extremely risky, that's where my interest ends.
Yeah. Well, there is none of this is any less risky. No. The big words, I won't say not. Let's say Bitcoin. I don't think Bitcoin is more risky than Tesla stock, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a reasonable assessment to say that they're about as hypes. And they both carry immense value in some sense, but no one really knows how it works inside. Except, you know, if you do with Bitcoin.
It's interesting that you mention Tesla. Because I think the main value of Tesla stock, it's, you know, the value of the stock is basically just a representation of how people feel about Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't make that many cars. You know, he doesn't make enough cars for him to be as famous as he is, you know, for cars. But,
no.
You know, he also makes rockets. He makes a lot of money contracting with the U.S. government to put stuff in space. And I'm very interested in that. You know, I know I'm in a weird position in that, you know, having known a lot of peak oil people and a lot of anti-technology people, and a lot of sort of back to the landers, they have just this visceral hatred of Elon Musk. And it can't be for anything the man has actually done or said. You know, nothing he's done or said justifies that level of antipathy. But I think they hate him because he is just a, you know, he's an avatar of techno-utopian thought. You know, he's a representation of the idea that through the strategic and intelligent application of advancing technology, we can make the world a better, more humane place. And a lot of people that I know and I've talked to over the years get very angry at that message. The idea that technology can be used to improve the human condition, it's very offensive to them. It's not offensive to me, and it sort of boggles me, but I see how you can get to that position. You know,
absolutely. They see a different solution. See a solution. Yeah, well, world made by hand. I didn't read the book, but I like the book. That's the title.
World made by hand, by the way, is it's a novel. It's not one of Jim Kunstler's non-fiction books. It's definitely an adventure tale set in a post-collapse world, and it has supernatural elements. You know, it's a lot like there are four books in the series, the one for each season of the year, and it reads a lot like a Stephen King novel, I think.
Yeah, I had a long episode where I was looking into permaculture and because that seemed to be the most likely place for me to find like-minded, I thought, because of the holistic philosophy of, you know, place things that belong together, close to each other and all that stuff. Edge ideas, so that's where things happen, you know, keep it quiet in the center and interesting things at the edge. So, yeah, that popped up. because as a contrast, I want to bring that way of thinking into the technological sphere. Not that I have any influence anywhere, but my approach to the technological world then. So, say, I want to be able to hold and touch and make sure. That's why I'm interested in Bitcoin. I prefer to buy, to you know, grow the plant if I can and eat it, rather than having it come to me in a plastic box in the supermarket. Even though the supermarket really is advancing for my quality of life. Does that make sense?
All right, well, that's like way less than half of that conversation. But I'm going to stop here because, well, you know, roughly an hour is about the length of these CROM podcast conversations. Do you want to hear the rest of that? if I get like more than five yeses, I'll do the next episode, will be a continuation. If I get fewer than that in the next 24 hours, I'll put the rest out just as a free-floating file on Patreon. And yes, the audio quality, particularly for Holon Mundi's side, was, yeah, subpar, we'll say. So if you want to hear more from Holon Mundi, and I do, like, I really got a lot out of this. So here's the thing I realized listening to this, is I would listen to the recording and edit out the long pauses and, you know, the weird starts, you know, just to make it more compact and more entertaining as a, just an audio, you know, just a piece of audio. To me, it just came off as a regular C-Realm podcast interview. But the whole time that I'm listening to Holon Mundi and talking, I'm also drawing images that either they're just live stream images just for the people watching the live stream, or if it's something fairly interesting, I'll grab a snapshot and I'll put it up on Twitter or Instagram. But as I'm listening to it and editing it, it doesn't occur to me that half of the interviewer's attention is elsewhere. But if you would like to hear more of this, I mean, there's a lot more of it, and love it or hate it, and there's no reason to love it, the audio quality is what it is. If you want to hear the rest of this and you're not up for going to my YouTube channel and finding this particular live stream and listening to everything with no editing whatsoever, because the editing, believe me, is cutting out some very long and unnecessary pauses, silences, unfruitful discourse, like segues. If you want to hear the rest, let me know. If I get more than five in the next 24 hours, five responses saying, yes, I want to hear more, I'll just put this out on the C-Realm Podcast Vault feed. I'll just dump the rest of it, you know, with minimal introduction. If I get fewer than five in the next 24 hours, then I will put it up. If I get more than one, but less than five in the next 24 hours, I will put the rest up as it is on Patreon for free for anybody to listen to. So let me know, which do you prefer? Okay, Elon Musk. I walked to the convenience store today to buy donuts and beer, and on the way I recorded a YouTube like selfie walking video. Those of you who follow my YouTube output, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, it doesn't matter. I blathered into a microphone for a bit as I walked, and I talked about how, as one of those weirdo, frickin' weirdo people who has one foot in the techno-utopian singularitarian camp and one foot in the peak oil doomer camp, but really, I'm not counting on either side to support my weight, and I'm ready to withdraw from both sides simultaneously. I talked about the weird, I mean, really weird hatred for Elon Musk that I have encountered in the peak oil, doomer, anti-technology scene. Like, people frickin' hate Elon Musk. When, think of somebody who's a bigwig at Raytheon or, you know, Lockheed Martin or General Dynamics or one of those big defense companies. They make a shit ton of money off of the national security state and, you know, the Cold War, which is like 30 years dead, but still, we maintain this huge nuclear arsenal and, you know, this Navy, which dwarfs all the other navies in the world combined. Private companies make enormous sums of money off of all of that. And doomers don't hate the profiteers. You know, the Cold War, U.S. Empire, military contractor profiteers, they don't hate those people nearly as much as they hate Elon Musk. And why? Because Elon Musk says that through the rational application of human intelligence and, oh, this most hated of concepts, this most hated of words, technology, we can create a more prosperous and humane human condition on Earth in the future. The hubris of this man to think that human application of intelligence in a technological application can make the human condition more bearable. That guy is contemptible. We hate that man, and we hate that idea. Most people don't say it with that exaggerated, cartoonish, you know, delivery. But that's the message. Why? Why, of all the people in the world to hate, would you hate on Elon Musk? I mean, given the competition, given the alternative objects for your derision, why focus on Elon Musk? What is it? What is it that motivates that hate? Anyway, do you want to hear more of this conversation? I cannot improve the audio quality. That's a done deal. It is baked in. Given that, do you want to hear more? If so, let me know. I'll put the rest up on Patreon. If not, well, you need do nothing, and your doing nothing leads to me doing nothing. You know, it's just that audio will be available on YouTube. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap this up now. Thank you, as always, thank you for subscribing to the C. Rome Vault podcast. You are a member of a very select group. We'll just leave it at that. Stay well.